I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey there, wrestling fans. It is I, CMG, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 27, and on today's episode, we, a little late, about a week late, but still finish our November month of looking at the WWE Thanksgiving tradition of Survivor Series. As we take a look at, 1 year later, Survivor Series 2003. Or at least 1 year later from the review we did last time, which was 2002. Could this Survivor Series hold up to the greatness that was in 2002? Probably not. You know, it's got Goldberg. It's got Triple H. Got Shawn Michaels and Austin. But it's also got one very important thing, which is ultimately the reason why I wanted to review this pay-per-view. This was the first instance, the first coming out, the first sign of what was to come of 10 years of dominance. In my mind, if you really want to be honest about it, this was the debut of the mega superstar that would come to be known as John Cena. No, not the debut in the organization, but the debut of him as a player. As in, this was the pay-per-view that where he broke out from the rest of the pack of rookies that were there. This was the pay-per-view that John Cena did. I did it pretty early, but we'll get to that. So, Survivor Series 2003, not really much preamble to talk about. Just to go over maybe quickly what we're going to do. I guess news and stuff has to be talked about. As far as December is concerned, I still have planned to review 2 Starcades. And like I said, it's going to be Starcade 84 and 85, respectively. And I plan on reviewing 2 Armageddons, one of them being 2001. So that's still the plan. You just may not see me do a review though next week to give fair warning, because this coming week is finals. At finals, and then I have a full weekend of work. I work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I might get an episode out, I don't know. But I do know this. Look forward to a whole lot of content to come out on the week of the 14th to the, the week of 15th to the 21st, because that will be the first week where I will be in school. I have my vacation! So you've got that. So that will be, I'm completely killing time for the song. So look out for that. I guess we have to talk about the elephant in the room. So last review I talked about, I gave my sort of views on CM Punk. His little speech with him, a little podcast with Colt Cabana. Since then, a lot of stuff has happened. One, Vince McMahon publicly apologized on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast that was, on the WWE Network. While he didn't talk about everything, because obviously, I understand there's people sitting there saying that he couldn't, but there's probably legality as far as company employees, even the CEO and the owner of the company, saying things. And I'm sure if he said things, he could be held for liable. So, yes, was he watching what he was probably saying? Absolutely. I actually do like that. I respect that he was at least honest. Look, there are things I would like to say, I don't want to say, other things. But the very one thing he did say is he did apologize. A lot of people saying, it was politics and publicity stunt. Fine, it's that. He still goddamn apologized. I'm sorry, he is the CEO of a company. He still goddamn apologized. Do you know any other CEOs that are coming out in public and apologizing for the shit their companies are doing? Do you see any Wall Street banker CEOs coming out and apologizing for taking the trillions of dollars from United States citizens? No, you don't. The fact that a CEO of a publicly funded company is coming out and apologizing for something is huge, whether you know it or not. And honestly, listening to him, I felt it was sincere. I know there are people who disagree with me and people claim that, you're so gullible, Tommy. But you know what? You can tell when somebody is being sincere. I felt he was being sincere. Yes, he has many years' experience in acting. It's great. I have spent a lot of my life trying to distinguish between when somebody is acting and when they're not. And if he was acting, damn, get that man an Oscar because he deserves it. Because outside of that, he was sincere. And I understand there's such blind loyalty to Punk. That doesn't mean you can't sit there and say, Vince did the right thing. Because he did. And then Punk did something last night. The news broke at the, I'm recording this on Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning. So the news apparently broke last night at UFC 181. Phil Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk, has signed a multi-fight agreement with the UFC. I was feeling for Punk after listening, because I really was. For all my criticisms, if you've listened to the latest, or one of the latest WrestleCasts where I was on talking about the podcast episode that Punk was on, I aired my grievances about it, but I still believed him, and I still, I did feel for what happened to him. That's starting to erode away. Why do I have the sneaking suspicion that we've been had by CM Punk? That CM Punk played us? Played with our emotions and everything? I'm just getting that sneaking suspicion, and I'm really not liking the feeling of being played. So, that's about all I'm going to say, because I don't know what my feelings are. I feel played about that, because CM Punk said specifically that he liked it, but he would never do UFC, and now he's doing UFC, and the fact that it took him this long to say stop chanting CM Punk to my wife, he should have done that a whole lot sooner. This is bringing out a lot of deeper anger I have at CM Punk that I've always had. And it's always been this conflict that I've had. Because in one man, there's a lot of things he does I really don't like. At the same point in time, I very much respect him for as good of a wrestler as he is. And again, it goes back to that, you know, that blind devotion to a man. But I digress. I think I killed enough time, don't you think I did? Again, going completely off the cuff there, because mostly I don't know what my thoughts are on it completely. I do know what my thoughts are on Vince McMahon. I do feel it was a very sincere apology. Whether it was politics or whether it was a publicity stunt, he was still very sincere. And at the very least, that's all you could ask for sometimes. And so yeah, Vince trying to show, look, said he's sincerely sorry, and then you have Punk trying to shove stuff in his face. Yeah, I'm starting to side with Vince on some of these things. I think it's the bottom line I'm starting to say. But now that I've opened that shitstorm, that can of shitstorm, and all that hate mail to come to me, why don't I get into our review proper, shall we? So, we have Survivor Series 2003 with the tagline of Fall from Grace, with the theme song of Build a Bridge by Limp Bizkit, which I will not be playing. Featuring the promotions of Raw and SmackDown, this took place on November 16th, 2003, at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas, with an attendance of 13,487. It seems larger than that. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Survivor Series 2003.
Special, you do. I can see it in your eyes. I can see it when you laugh at me. Look down on me and walk around on me. Just
get right into it, shall we? First, there's the dark match to talk about. That wasn't a dark match, but it took place on Sunday Night Heat. But once again, as we've been mentioned, they do not have Sunday Night Heat up yet on the WWE Network. Again, I think people would like to see that, so we can't talk about it. But the match was for the Cruiserweight Championship. It was the champion Tajiri defending against Jamie Noble. Tajiri won. Don't know how I'm trying to say. He pinned Noble after a buzzsaw kick. I'm pretty sure Akito and Sakota were probably involved, as they were at the time. Usually, by my memory, served me right. But our first match of the evening, we kick off with what may be the best match of the night. We have Team Angle, consisting of Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, John Cena, Hardcore Holly, and Bradshaw, versus Team Lesnar of Brock Lesnar, the WWE Champion, Big Show, Matt Morgan, Nathan Jones, and A-Train. This was literally David versus Goliath. And I love this match. Right from the beginning, it throws everything into whack by the fact that Hardcore Holly gets goddamn eliminated before the match starts because he goes bumfuck nuts. It's like, holy shit, Hardcore. So, it starts off with Bradshaw and A-Train, and, there's a reason we love Bradshaw. We loved his hard-hittingness, and he hit A-Train with one hell of a clothesline from hell. It was just, anytime you see the clothesline of hell on a really big person, it's always awesome, I feel, because I think it always has that more impact to it. And I mean, the The eliminations went fast and fury. Bradshaw would be eliminated by Big Show with a chokeslam. And then, of course, it would go fast and further from that. Matt Morgan and Nathan Jones put on, a good, again, they were sort of these big newbies at the WWE, and they really did, I thought, a good job for being as green as they were at the time. But their eliminations by Angle with the ankle slam and the ankle lock, damn sure impressive. And mind you, again, it was a thing of this match just had these like surprise eliminations throughout it. In this case, right after an ankle lock, Angle gets picked up by Lesnar and gets immediately F5'd and eliminated. So now it's Cena and Benoit versus Lesnar and Show. And, I talked about this being a debut for John. And John Cena was doing a lot of great stuff throughout the match, on the outside. He had a couple moments inside where he did very well. But also Chris Benoit shined. Because this was really the beginning of the storyline of Chris Benoit on his march to becoming WWE champion. Or World Heavyweight Champion, excuse me. As he would, this would be momentum that would push him through towards the Royal Rumble, where he would win for the number one spot and then go on to challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship of Shawn Michaels and Triple H and, end up winning it. This is where that started from, or at least the momentum for it started from. And it helped when you make Brock Lesnar submit to the Crippler Crossface, which was an awesome moment in the match. But then, I think just as awesome was the finish. And it's definitely one of the moments, because really, again, you have the Big Show. Who lifts the Big Show? John Cena lifts the Big Show. First, he hits him with the goddamn chain, because there's no way Big Show saw that. And then he lifts 500 plus pounds on his shoulders and hits the FU. At the time, I don't think anybody had seen. And mind you, it is something that every time you see Cena do it, it gets more amazing. But at the same point, especially now where he didn't have, John Cena didn't have the build he had now. I mean, he was strong, but John Cena's a little bit broader nowadays. He has a bit more muscle. Here, he seemed a bit more thinner and stuff. So seeing this guy be able to lift him, it was uncanny strength. And they hit Big Show with the FU for the 1-2-3. This was, in a way, not only was this the start of his momentum of, he's going to be something on this company, but again, this was really also the face turn. This was the start of John Cena becoming a face. Because really, a large part of up to now, he was a heel. With the, Dr. Thugonomics gimmick. Now, this was a turn to him being as a face, and it was a great turn, I felt, with the match. So, just a really good Survivor Series. It's one of my favorite Survivor Series matches to watch. Our next match is for the WWE's Women's Championship, as Molly Holly, the champion, defends against Lita. This is a very, very solid match. This seemed like it could be one of those main event matches, like at the top of the hour on Raw. That's how good it was for this wasn't the worst match of the night. There's a couple other matches that go to that. I would dare say this is the fourth best match of the night, in fact. So it's in the middle. So it was a very good outing by both Molly and Lita. Great back and forth. Lita was just returning to WWE after her neck injury. And again, Molly Holly was great as a heel here. And then, the drop toe hold into the middle turnbuckle and the roll up that was exposed, mind you, and the roll up. Great way to end it. It was just a great back and forth wrestling match, which was great to see out of the women's division. And it's a damn shame that we don't get to see that anymore in the women's division. I mean, Molly Holly and Lita were given almost 7 minutes of screen time to have a match. Whereas the Divas division now can't get more than 30 fucking seconds. Yeah, I'm a bit sour about that. This was a damn good match, and I wish these days we'd see more matches exactly like this. That brings us to our next match. The next match is an ambulance match between Kane and Shane McMahon. Now, the storyline, of course, at this time was that Kane had recently unmasked around 6 months earlier. You know, he had lost a match where he had to give up his mask. And that whole storyline was playing, and he was going bumfuck crazy. And it led to him tombstoning, at one point, Linda McMahon. Which led to a feud between him and Shane. And this was supposed to be the culmination of the feud, to where somebody was going to get injured so bad that they would be taken away in an ambulance. Now, the rules of an ambulance match are simple. First person to throw their opponent in an ambulance and close the doors wins. God damn, this is why everybody loves Shane McMahon. He is bum fuck crazy. The moments, the diving elbow drop through the announcer table, which is at this point standard for any Shane McMahon match. Just the intelligence of the storytelling of what Shane doing, he's leading him to the back. I mean, sans production connection problems. Leading him to the back to ambush him with a kendo stick, drive him down, and then to drive an SUV into him, or into a barricade that pushes Kane into a glass security box. And then have a second ambulance waiting, but it ultimately fails, but, you know. I love the storytelling. I don't know why I did love that storytelling, but this was just a brutal match. You then have the coast-to-coast from the ambulance down to the, there's a point to where the ambulance is in the entranceway. And there's the rails, the barricade. But not the barricade that's padded, but the barricade that has more steel on it. And there's a corner where it goes, as like that front stage opens up. And he has Kane against the corner there, and he has a trash can there, and he has a landing box, let's call it. I know there's another name for it, but it's a stunt box. It's something for people to, basically, when you're doing massive stunts, for people to land into. He then climbs on the ambulance, and he leaps from the ambulance and performs a dropkick through this trash can onto Kane. That was damn impressive. Nobody had ever seen that before. Of course, Kane would ultimately get the upper hand, hit the tombstone, and shove him into the ambulance and win. But you know what? For a hardcore match, it was pretty damn... It wasn't the most hardcore of hardcore. It was definitely a spot fest, but it was an enjoyable spot fest. Here's the thing. They had at least 4 or 5 spots in the match, but every spot was built to. Like, they didn't do them right away. It's like, let's build, okay, we had a spot, so now let's take some time and build to the next spot. And so on and so on. So I did enjoy the match for that reason. Now, in between this and the next match, you have some bullshit of Eric Bischoff calling out... I shouldn't say bullshit. Because I do like the fact that he calls out Mark Cuban, and he pushes Mark Cuban around, and Mark Cuban pushes the hell back. Only to lead to him getting an RKO from Randy Orton. Because this was part of his Legend Killer gimmick. But yeah, this is the moment where I realized I want Mark Cuban to own my sports team. Because really, Mark Cuban is the coolest goddamn fucking sports owner in the world.
Yeah, I said it.
I wish he would move from Texas and come to Tampa. I really do. Um, Our next match is for the tag team titles. You have the Basham brothers of Doug and Danny Basham with Shaniqua, the WWE tag team champions at the time, versus Los Guerreros of Eddie and Chavo Guerrero. Now, this was a solid match, but the other thing that this match did was, again, that it was building story. This match was part of the building storyline that would be built to the Royal Rumble of Eddie versus Chavo. And I actually noticed because earlier this year, I actually did end up watching the 2004 Royal Rumble in anticipation of maybe choosing that, seeing if I wanted to choose that to review for January when I do Royal Rumble month. And that was the first match on the card, mind you. Again, mind you, also, actually, no, it was a second match, and it's, by the way, it's in Philadelphia, by the way. Like this year's Royal Rumble is. Too bad I couldn't get any goddamn tickets. Anyway. So this was sort of really the start of that storyline. And mind you, this was a really good match. Good back and forth. They really did show Los Guerreros in a lot of control throughout the match. But again, and I do like the ending because I like the whole idea of, again, just a simple little miscommunication costs them the match. And that's sort of the little spark that's put there. And then you have these sparks that build off each other later in later pay-per-views and events that build towards this rivalry happening. But I do like the end. I like the whole fact that the miscommunication leading to Chavo getting, you know, basically a page being taken out of their book and getting rolled up and the tights being pulled. I also did like the fact that Shaniqua got hers. It was classic Los Guerreros, and, you know, again, for all the cheating that she had been doing, it was good to see her get her comeuppance. So, solid match for the tag team titles. That takes us to our next match. Our next match is a Survivor Series 515 elimination match featuring Team Bischoff of Chris Jericho, Christian, Randy Orton, Scott Steiner, and Mark Henry versus Team Austin of Shawn Michaels, RVD, Booker T, and the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley. And, yeah, I do kind of find it a bit funny that on one hand you got Team WWE, WCW, and Chris Jericho, Christian, Randy Orton, Scott Steiner, and Mark Henry. You had people that were solid WWE or WCW guys. And then you had Shawn Michaels, you know, Team Austin. I mean, yeah, you had Shawn Michaels, and Booker T was only WCW, but you also had, in a way, you had a bit of ECW, RVD, and the Dudley Boys there. I know, I'm trying to make something out of nothing, but it was something I definitely noticed. I thought it was a good back and forth. I really enjoyed the story that was told with this match, because, again, the whole thing leading to it was, it's in Dallas, Texas. And Austin's job's on the line, but there's no way Austin would lose. And the silence in the crowd when he did lose. When, you know, again, Batista comes in, Batista bombs while everybody's down, Shawn Michaels, and, you know, Austin's occupied with Bischoff in the entranceway. And it leads to Orton getting the win. Nobody could believe what was happening. I mean, by the way, the crowd was great for the pay-per-view, I thought. And it really showed here as they were really into the match. And like I said, it was a great back and forth. I love the two quick successions of eliminations where Booker T eliminated Scott Steiner thanks to the help of Stacy Keibler. And then Mark Henry eliminates him. I love it, the elimination of Mark Henry where it's the 3D and then followed by the frog splash. Of course, RVD would then get eliminated by Randy Orton. And also, mind you here, with this, again, the backstory to where cheating leads to Shawn Michaels being ended up in a 3-on-1. And but unlike, you know, Dolph Ziggler, while like Dolph Ziggler, he's able to defeat two people and make it 1-on-1. But unlike Dolph Ziggler, Shawn Michaels can't, you know, get the win thanks to Batista, mind you. This, in a way, this match, actually, when you think about it, is the exact reverse of, in a way, of what happened in this year's Survivor Series. And I say that where, instead of Sting coming out and helping the good guys, you have a bad guy coming out and helping the bad guys. And it leading to somebody losing their job. As opposed to the authority losing job here, it's Austin. This is actually the same exact match when you think about it. I'm trying to think about it. I mean, the good guys did get the first pin in both. I mean, it didn't go almost the exact way, but yeah. This is pretty much the same exact match, these two matches. The Survivor Series, the Team Cena versus Team Authority match, and the Team Austin and Team Bischoff match were the same exact match. They just really switched the ending. I just don't know, man. That's freaky, in a way. And then, of course, you had Austin's response after, you know, pick. One thing that I do have a criticism of was just how much Shawn Michaels was bleeding. We would see this in the next match as well. I, you know, there's only so much suspension of disbelief that you can have, and here I had a hard time disbelieving because that's a lot of blood. I'm looking at like, okay, he should be dead from that much blood loss, or at least knocked out. I had a hard time believing that much blood was coming out. Mind you, don't get me wrong, I am all for blood, as I've said before. But there is such a thing as too much blood. I will absolutely agree with that. And this was too much blood. Yeah, just too much blood. That's my criticism of it. But other than that, a good match. And then you had Austin's goodbye speech, which was awesome. Then I love the fact that you have Coach come out like, nah, 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 nah. I'm like, motherfucker, really? You're really going to do this? And it was great to see Coach get his comeuppance. And so, at this time, with him being the kiss-up that he was, it was always great to see Coach get his comeuppance. It's what Coach was good at, was getting his comeuppance. Because you remember all the times, you know, this, where he faced Shawn Michaels, when he gets pie-faced by Big Show in the Rumble, 2006. So, yeah. It was good to see his comeuppance, and it was, you know what? It was a great bookend to Austin's 30-year career. 30 or 20, this time, was it? He said he started in 1999. 13. 13-year career. Yeah. I think I got that right. I have to do math in the morning. This is hard. I love the sign of respect to the two beers. I mean, mind you, yes, Austin would come back sporadically. But this was really the end to Austin being on the road and being a major main part of the locker room. This was his retirement. And you know what? For Austin, I thought it was a good way to go out. It was fun. It was enjoyable. And he left... You know, left us with a beer, and I can respect that. What I can't respect is a match that was really all about Segway and building towards a WrestleMania match. Well, it built toward a lot of good things, let's say that, but at the same point, I did feel jibbed by what I wanted. That is Vince McMahon versus Undertaker in a Buried Alive match. And how this match, by the way, went 12 minutes, I have no idea. Okay, it's, by the way, part of the storyline is that, you know, Vince was preventing Undertaker from getting the WWE Championship because for whatever reason he didn't want him to have it. Why, I don't think anybody knew. Mind you, Undertaker was in the American Badass gimmick at this time. And so, Undertaker was going to bury Vince alive, you know, to get him out of his hair. Opening salvo of the match is a punch that immediately bloodies Vince McMahon so bad that literally blood is gushing out. Again, go, while I did have a problem with Shawn Michaels, there was at least some, I guess I would say, okay, it was too much, but it wasn't so much over the top. This was so much. This was like cartoony in how much blood. I'm like, this motherfucker should be dead by now from this much blood loss. But majority of this match was just Undertaker beating the hell out of Vince, and then he takes him to bury him and goes to, puts him in the grave, goes to drop the lever because they had this dirt loader that had the dirt for the burying up above, and fire comes out and it's Kane, and he knocks his brother in the grave, has Vince go throw the lever, and Vince wins with Undertaker buried alive. The reason I feel jibbed is that if they were going to do this, I would have loved there to have been more back and forth and everything, but there wasn't. And for that matter, really, this was just, okay, well, we had this storyline going with Vince, but we really have no way to end it, and we want to keep Undertaker off so we can change him from his badass gimmick back to his dead man gimmick and set up a match at WrestleMania with Kane. That's what it was about. I digress. I feel jibbed. That leads us to our final match of the evening. Our final match for the evening is for the World Heavyweight Championship. The World Heavyweight Champion Bill Goldberg defends against Triple H with Ric Flair. What to say about this match? Now, mind you, I did like Goldberg's run in the WWE. I mean, I may do WrestleMania 20 this year, so I'll leave my feelings on how fans treated him at 20 for another day. But all in all, I pretty much enjoyed Goldberg's year-long run in the WWE. This was not a solid match by any means. The problem with this match is that it's very sloppy. They don't do anything wrong. They tell a great story. They're just very sloppy. And I know people immediately blame Goldberg for that, but actually, if you watch this match, it's not Goldberg's fault. It's Triple H's, and I say that because I don't know if anybody else has this opinion, but my opinion at this time was that Triple H was really fat. He's not, like, super fat, but he was fat for somebody who's supposed to be this cut, muscular guy. And during this time, he was coming off as very, very sloppy in his wrestling. And it shows here, because there are just moments to where it's counter, and the point of the counter is supposed to be on Triple H, and Triple H is the one who's being sloppy. And people going the wrong way and falling the wrong way. It's just, it came off feeling sloppy. It's a solid match. And mind you, yeah, you have a Goldberg match that does last over 10 minutes, which is, I think, what WWE was good at, was having these matches last more than 5 minutes at the very least, if not more than 10 minutes. But yeah, the problem with the match is it's solid. It's a decent World Heavyweight Championship match, and mind you, the storyline, the whole bounty thing, that rang a sort of almost Dusty Rhodes versus the Four Horsemen in a way, had people buying the ticket. And I can't say it was a satisfying payoff, but I can't say it wasn't a payoff at all to have him defeat Triple H. But at the same point in time, what really hurts it is the fact that the match is really sloppy. But at the same point in time, as I said, I do love the match, and I love watching Goldberg. Maybe it's a Jewish thing. So that's it for the review. Let's go over favorite matches and moments, starting with moments. From the Team Bischoff, Team Austin match, the 3D of Mark Henry followed by the Frog Splash, I really like that. My second favorite moment is John Cena lifting the Big Show up for the FU That was pretty damn impressive. And then, of course, my favorite moment is Shane McMahon's coast-to-coast off the ambulance to Kane. Those were just three wonderful moments. I'll give an honorable mention to Mark Cuban shoving Eric Bischoff with such philosophy that he goes out of the ring. That was really impressive as well. And then last but not least, favorite matches. Number three, Team Bischoff versus Team Austin. For the storytelling aspect, I liked it. Number two is Kane versus Shane McMahon in the ambulance match. But my number one is Team Angle versus Team Lesnar. Because again, the heel turn, the face turn, the heel turn of John Cena. Yeah, if the heel turn, I don't know if John Cena would still be here. But the face turn of John Cena and him breaking out, his breakout moment, become a breakout star. And of course, Chris Benoit's build towards his championship, among other sort of storylines that built with this match. And also being just a solid, great opening match that got the crowd to it. It's my favorite match of the evening. So, all in all, I think Survivor Series 2003 is a very solid pay-per-view. But in span of comparing it to last year's, unfortunately, Survivor Series 2002 is a much better pay-per-view. And when you compare it to that, it's almost unfair in a way. But at the end of the day, this was a solid pay-per-view. And for the most part, you got payoffs to storylines. There were a couple that didn't. And you call bullshit on that, but yeah. Still, it's a solid pay-per-view. I would give Survivor Series 2003 a solid 3.5 out of 5. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. And remember, if you have any email comments or anything you want to send the show, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can email the show at AbsolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AbsolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Stitcher account, which you can find at www.stitcher.com. And you can also find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network. Search for the Absolution Network on Stitcher as well. Either one, like us, leave us a comment. You can also leave a comment on the post itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, and the Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast, along with Shin Tiger Curl's videos and John Ramos' videos. Also, make sure you check out my Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, where you can find my Comic Book Crazy Podcast, my Hexcast, the only podcast reviewing every issue of Jim Bale and Stero, Witch of the Black Rose, and of course, Spectacular Webs. And don't forget about Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out our friends on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Manny J and the WrestleCast, Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas in the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher in the Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course Scott Gunner and the Two Freaks Podcasting Network. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next time out, we go back to the 80s. We get in our DeLorean. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we take a look at the $1 million match between Dusty Rhodes and the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, as we review Starrcade 1984. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMG. I'm the best Jew in the world! You're all alive and you're all alive. Each and every day I
afraid to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. I stand on my two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts to feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them mother to live that fast life, but just bring home.